Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, 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 everyone. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Monday, October 30th, day before Halloween trick-or-treat time. I am your host, Scott Fullerton. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you guys all had a fantastic weekend. Lots of pictures going through my social media feeds of Halloween parties over the weekend. Hope you all had some fun, got a little candy, got a little cocktail, had a good old time. I honestly have not been feeling that good for the weekend. I think it's partly the temperature change. You guys know last week we had a low of 43 degrees. It's going to be in 40s for the first 3 days of this week. And I'm just not feeling up to snuff. So luckily I had pre-tape interviews scheduled for this week because I knew it was going to be a little trick-or-treat time. So I appreciate you tuning in. These are new shows. Today I have a first-time interview with Corey Frederick, who has a fantastic story going from an HIV positive person to an activist on it, and from being a porn star, actually a gay porn star, to writing and becoming a mainstream actor. It's a fascinating story. So we're going to be talking to Corey Frederick up first. Then I'm going to do a repeat of Katie and Michael Gonzalez from the movie Ekaj. It's a movie that's been getting great reviews and film festivals all over the world. They're getting ready for wide release. I fell in love with this movie last year, and I wanted to talk to you about it again today because I thought it'd be a good subject to talk about. I'm going to replay that interview with you for them. Tomorrow I have all new, even though it's going to be pre-tape interviews, with the fantastic Jenna Ushkowitz from Glee and Derek Jameson, a singer-songwriter and fitness professional. Going to be a great show tomorrow. Then Wednesday, we'll do Standing on My Soapbox, depending on how I feel. But just wanted to check with y'all today. Hope you have a fantastic weekend and a great week ahead. Enjoy your trick-or-treating tomorrow. I'll be helping pass out candy during the show, and I may go to a Halloween party if I'm feeling up to it. But let's go ahead and go right into it. We are going to start today with the first interview from Corey Frederick, and you're listening to Left of Straight Show. Have a great rest of the week. Bye-bye. And we are back. My next guest is quite the story, guys, from addiction to recovery and from porn star to writer and advocate. He has written for such publications as the Huffington Post, DNA Magazine, Homer Culture, and so much more. He recently opened to the readers and fans in an in-depth article for Instinct magazine and spoke open and frankly about his dealing with HIV, his porn star past, and so much more. I'm really excited to talk to him today. Please welcome to the show for the first time, Mr. Corey Frederick. Welcome to the show, Corey. How you doing?
Hi, I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks for calling in today. How's everything in beautiful downtown Chicagoland?
Good. It's a very chilly, windy day, but other than that, it's really good.
It's getting winter time. We have to move back to LA. I'm telling you this. It's horrible.
I know.
You have to spend some time in LA. I grew up there, so I miss it.
Yeah, I lived there for almost 2 years. It's a whole other beast out there.
Definitely, as you're right. All right, well, you got such a fascinating story. I can't wait to kind of talk all about it. I mean, I heard your story a bit when we were trying out new radio shows here for my radio network. You talked to our buddy Brandon Carmody. So fascinating, so cool. But let's start at the very beginning here. Talk about where you grew up, what kind of kid were you, and what was your earliest dreams, what you were kind of thinking about when you were growing up there?
Well, for the most part, I grew up around Kansas City, Missouri, in a small farm town called Smithville. And I was a pretty good kid, quiet, definitely not like the others. yeah, so, I mean, I had a pretty normal childhood.
And what were your, what did you want to be when you grew up, growing around in Kansas City?
I wanted to be Indiana Jones. But once I found out that that's not quite a real job, I set my sights elsewhere.
I love it. Well, we're in October. This is it's National Coming Out Day on the 11th. Can you tell me a little bit about your coming out story? Were you able to come out back home, or where did you come out?
I did. I came out. I didn't come out to my family first. I kind of came out to friends. And then one day I remember my parents had, they had come over to my house and they had like my aunts and uncles with them who were visiting them. And they asked me who I was dating. And I said, I was dating a doctor. At the time I was dating a doctor. And then, so they were all like, oh, a doctor.
So proud.
Eh? So then I was like, yeah, his name is, and they were pretty floored. So that was my coming out to my family.
Oh, wow.
I don't really give people a choice to, or the chance to kind of question or how do I say it? Take me down a peg or two or impose their beliefs on me.
Confidence.
So
I like that.
I beat them to the punch. So they had, nice. They had
just
no choice but to, there you go. They had no choice but to just get on board.
I love it.
So that was my coming out.
Well, you've had, like I said, a huge story. I have so many issues I want to talk about, from early sexual abuse you talked about to mental health issues. And I want to talk about some of this later, but you really opened this article in Instinct where your HIV diagnosis was really a pivotal thing in your world. It kind of rocked the world the most. Talk about that early experience of finding out and how it was a fight from the start, from insurance to writing about it.
Yeah.
The tragedy of Ryan White. I mean, it really affected your life.
Well, I'm lucky because my partner at the time, who found out that he was positive, he informed me. So I have to give him so much credit for stepping up, being a man, and letting me know, which really helped me and my health to not really jeopardize me waiting or not knowing.
We talked about that much. That's
yeah.
Very important. You're
yeah. So he will always have my respect. And, you know, we were both in it together. We were both, engaging in unsafe sex. So it's not his fault. It's both of our faults. So nothing but respect for him. After I found out, I took a job getting back to normal, and one that I thought was going to keep me grounded. And then I ended up moving to Texas, and that's where all hell broke loose when it came to HIV and insurance and medication. And just finding out when you pick up your first, HIV prescription under your new job and under your new insurance, and they don't cover your medication, was pretty traumatic. And then fighting with not only your insurance but your job to make sure that you get covered, was not the easiest of situations to be a part of. So then
you can
imagine.
I want to talk about that because I think that's an interesting part of your story and instinct, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, here you are, you're newly diagnosed, you're moving to a new town, and of course, Texas, we know, is not the most welcoming to our gay population in general.
It was not.
But now you're in a new job, you need life-saving medication, and I'm not sure where this was in the disease when there was a lot of medication, there were still back of the older medications, but
yeah,
you're not entitled to it because your insurance is not going to cover it. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, I'm not even sure what there is to talk about. I mean, I think I didn't even realize that that still happened or could happen or that no one would care. So it just kind of goes to show that there's still a lot of fights out there, and just access to treatment and adherence is still a really big deal, an issue for HIV positive gay men. And when nearly 50% of gay HIV positive men aren't sticking to antiretroviral adherence or do not have access to medication, I think my story kind of goes to show that the system isn't always fair. It's sometimes built against us. So if we want to keep people healthy and limit the transmission of the virus, then why are we making it so difficult for individuals to get on their antiretroviral medications? None of it makes sense to me.
That had to be a scary time. Were you able to have resources, or did that kind of start your activism to learn about it?
How
did you find out about options?
Options. Through the resource center there in Dallas, I was able to get 1 month emergency supply of my HIV medication, but then that left me with 5 months without. Gilead, the company that made my medication, which was a Atripla at the time, they stepped in and they pretty much paid for my medication for a year.
They heard my
story, and yeah, they were pretty amazing to me. It was like divine intervention.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I love that. And then around the same time, you're still working for the same company, and you started with these great writing skills, and you talk about a little about the disease and Ryan White and that whole mess that happened around him, which was so sad back then. But that didn't go over well with the coworkers, I guess, right?
It did not, no. So I started writing for a local newspaper there in Texas, and I wrote about the era of the death sentence. That was the title of my article. I wrote about Ryan White and remembering the millions of lives that were lost on the onset of the AIDS epidemic here in the United States. And I outed myself as an HIV-positive gay male. And I had a bunch of coworkers read the article and, you know, just didn't make them feel comfortable, I guess, not only working with, you know, a gay man, but an HIV-positive gay man. So I was pretty much asked to resign, which I did, and I've never hated people more in my life than I did at that point. I never understood the cruelty or the ignorance that people are capable of.
I can imagine. That's horrible. Now, this is what I found real interesting, though. So now you're at this point. You were denied drug coverage. You fought to get it. You got lucky with this company. You end up losing your job trying to tell your story and to help others.
Yeah.
And you had offers like this before and you refused, but all of a sudden you're offered a job in the porn industry again. And in your thinking, this is actually a positive thing because it can actually help spread the message. Tell me about your thoughts on that, getting into the business.
Yes, I kind of was at my lowest point, so I was like, I have nothing to lose, and at least I'll be able to maybe be a face that represents living healthy with HIV, and, you know, have it directly relate to the reasons why gay men become HIV positive, you know, through gay sex. So I decided I'm going to get a lot of hell for this, but we're going to do gay porn, and we're going to talk about issues like HIV. Yeah, it was humbling for me to, in a weird, unconventional way, have a little bit of a voice when it comes to health and sex and HIV in the gay world, in the gay community.
Well, it's definitely unconventional, but when you think about it, it's such a kind of a great thing to do because, I mean, obviously you're a very good-looking man. Obviously, we'll talk about your fitness later because you have an amazing body, especially when you start out.
Oh, thanks.
But you're also talking about real stories, and so you're using a platform that some people might find as embarrassing, but you're finding it as, A, it's a way to make money, and B, it's a way to really talk about something that's not being talked about. So that's really commendable when you think about it. I thought it was amazing.
Well, yeah, and you know, there are quite a few gay porn stars who are such leaders and role models and have so much more going for them and use their platforms to really reach the community. I'm proud to have been a part of that as well.
Well, talk about that. We won't make that too titillating, but I want to talk about it because I'm interested. I had actually last week I talked to Michael Lucas from Michael Lucas Entertainment, of course. He's in his 20th anniversary of forming his porn empire. And I want to talk about a couple aspects of it. First, in the HIV aspect of it, he was a huge advocate for condoms when he first came out. But with HIV and everything, he realizes the effectiveness of PrEP and zero viral loads. Talk about that a bit.
Well, first of all, I think it does such a disservice to the community when advocates and community groups only focus on condom only as respectable ways to look at the HIV transmission rates within the gay community. That's not reality. I kind of feel like sometimes we've made condoms a joke by throwing them, by passing them around, you know, at fundraisers and functions like they're candy. It's like we've taken power away from using condoms. We've made them into a joke.
Right.
The thing is, when we're not real, when we're not honest, when we're not brutally honest, and admit, you know, most in the community or a large percentage of gay men engage in unprotected sex, and if we don't talk about the reasons why and know that it's normal, when we stigmatize or shame it, then it just makes people not be open and honest about their own sexual practices. So I think if we encourage reality, talking about real things, talking about real reasons, like, and not hide them and not shy away from being open, if we're presenting ourselves as perfect and we're not being honest, then I think
there's a way that just interests us that
yeah,
and it's like the way it's always been. I understand what you're saying.
And I think once you're open and honest and you're able to have discussions then that aren't, you know, condom only, I think it actually makes it sexier to use condoms.
Right, and we've also had 5 years of studies showing how effective PrEP is, and just recently came out about if you're at a zero viral load, you have a 0% chance of passing the virus along. So safe alternatives out there. We just have to kind of pay attention and read the literature on it, right?
Yes, but also when it comes to that, there's so many things that we don't talk about. Yes, when you're with someone who is HIV positive but undetectable, there's zero risk of transferring the HIV virus. But the problem is less than 50% of all HIV positive gay men are sticking to their antiretroviral adherence or have access to their medications. So, you know, that is an issue that needs to be addressed because not everyone is able to even get access to the medications to stay healthy. And just because you're on PrEP doesn't do from other STI infections like syphilis, hepatitis, A, B, and C, and HPV.
Right.
So we should be not just throwing condoms at people and demanding the condom use. We should be getting people on PrEP. We should be getting these boys vaccinated for HPV. We need to get boys vaccinated for hepatitis A and B. And also make sure that everyone in our community has access to HIV medication.
Very well said. And like you said, they have to take it too. You have to take your medication. Even PrEP, you're not allowed to skip it. You got to take that every day in order for it to be effective.
When we're stigmatizing people for, you know, engaging in bareback sex, which is normal, when we put those stigmas on people, then it makes them not as willing to seek out help or to be proactive when it comes to their own sexual health. So I think I feel like it does more damage to not be open in the community and to only think that condoms will be the answer.
Right. Well said. Now talk about this part of the porn industry. I mean, we're talking about something very natural for us in the LGBT community, but you're working with something that obviously inflicts a lot of pleasure and inflicts a lot of pain. How does that in creating with your other coworkers? You have some great experiences. You have some bad experiences, like regular everyday us going out and having with different people we meet, or talk about the ins and outs of either falling in love on set or just going, I don't ever want to see this guy again.
Well, filming gay porn is way more difficult than anyone probably realizes. You know, the positions are most of the time pretty difficult to be in. And then, you know, taking dick nonstop, work, staying hard all day is not always the easiest thing to do. So it really helps when you like your screen, like your scene partner.
Right.
That can make it a really enjoyable day because it's really about the two of you and your connection and you're in this scene together. So, like, I loved Sebastian Cross. He was my favorite scene partner of all time. And just shooting with him all day was, like, one of the best days of my life just because it was so fun and so safe. Like, I felt so safe with him and protected and just had a great connection.
That's awesome.
But then there are some, you know, who can come in like divas and they're really concerned about them and how they look and how they get through the scene and their comforts. And it can make it really difficult when you don't have that connection with your scene partner.
Right.
So it can be a grueling experience filming. So the experiences that are really, really good, they mean a lot more.
Basically, like any job, you like some coworkers, you hate some coworkers. Well, I want to go ahead and take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about everything you've been doing since then. You've become such a fantastic writer and advocate for so many great things. You're in mainstream film. Now you've worked on some of amazing television shows that a lot of us have heard about. Let's take a quick break. We're going to play a little bit of our good friend Blake MacGyver's Start to Believe. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Corey Fredrickson right here on the Left or Straight Show. We'll be right back.
Staring down that long and winding road, I felt like I could never start again. flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when, before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need, and baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Looking up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those feeble lies. Cause now you bring me all I could ask for. All that I need, and baby, you gather the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe.
I guess I'll start to believe.
And though my doubts close in, I know that you'll there, I won't despair. My dream coming true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control. Your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. And baby, you gather the pieces. I guess I'll start to believe.
That was Blake MacGyver with Start to Believe. Blake has had a fantastic stint in New York singing his songs. Blake Salutes Barbara, where he did Barbara's 98 tour. So we're looking to have him talk back on the show. He's going to bring that tour national pretty soon. Guys, we're talking today with Corey Fredrickson. Fantastic story. Doing so much right now in writing. And it's kind of funny, I read your article Instinct, and you said you never thought of yourself as much as an actor. You were just like trying to be real, but now you're actually doing some acting. You're on the Chicago Hope or Chicago Fire, but on Modern Family. What made you transition to and believe in yourself and being an actor?
Well, I guess I was kind of being a little self-deprecating when I made that comment. It's not like I'm doing huge acting roles or anything like that, but definitely like building and trying to, expand my resume in that area when it comes to acting. I've had some opportunities to, film some incredible TV shows, and I've had some pretty big parts on some and smaller parts on others. So we're just really seeing there, and I never really thought that I would ever become like an actor, a mainstream actor. So, yeah, I guess I'm just seeing what's possible and what kind of comes up.
That's great, and so many great shows are filming in Chicago now, but would you ever,
yes,
if you started taking more seriously, you think you'd ever want to move back to L.A. and kind of get in the middle of it all?
No. No, no, no.
No.
My,
that's
my,
emphatic.
No. L.A. is a great place to visit.
I love
it's
it.
It's a great place
it.
To live it, to visit. no, my future, I think, is here in Chicago. This is one of the most incredible cities in the world. It's home. It feels like home. It's a very special place, and it's given me a lot of opportunities that I would not get anywhere else. Yeah, I don't ever want to leave Chicago, but my dream, what I'm working towards now is to make more of my writing my career, but also going back to school for social and international justice. I would love to work for the United Nations someday. So
fantastic.
That, I hope, is my future, and that most likely won't have anything to do with acting. So yeah,
gotcha.
I would love to be a first responder. Thanks. Thank you. Starting my second master's degree this January. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of work, a lot of sacrifice, but it's definitely where I want the rest of my life to go.
That is fantastic. We'll talk about your writing a bit, because you've talked about personal experience, but you're also very open and honest about current events. I love people that are well-informed, and you definitely, through both social media and your writing, talk about
I'm
a lot of
political.
Things that are important. What's that?
Yeah. I'm definitely pretty political. Well, I just think there's a lot of things that aren't addressed in the media, and that's when I kind of swoop in and talk about things that I think are important. And when it comes to, like, my writing, I have free rein over what I write, so I try to take that really seriously. And yeah, I don't know, I hope in my own little way maybe it's contributing to getting important stories out.
And I love that you're using social media, because social media is such a tool. I mean, I can imagine from previous life, social media is all about self-promoting yourself and things like that. But you're really using your social media to inform people about all these other subjects. You retweet a lot of really great articles, your articles and yourself.
Yeah.
How do you think social media is these days, and what should we be using social media for, in your opinion?
Well, I get such hell for my social media sometimes, because I got really sick, especially on Facebook, of the whole present, don't rock the boat. Don't talk about things that are challenging, you know. A lot of people just presenting the best of themselves and having such an opportunity to be authentic, be your authentic you. I mean, that's what social media is. It's about you, your authentic you. So I wasn't going to play the whole game of giving a safe social media. So I'm giving my good, my bad, my ugly. It's all, you know, about me and my passions in life. So it drives some people crazy because, you know, I don't always make myself look very, very good. I talk a lot about my problems, but also my success. I want to be that person that's open and letting other people know that it's okay to be open.
To be bold. Be bold and speak, yeah. Speak their mind.
Uh-huh. And that you don't have to play the whole game of popularity or socially acceptable. You can be your authentic you. You can use your stories to impact other people's lives and let people know that they're not alone, or to help shed some light on issues that are maybe stigmatized. So yeah, I definitely give a challenging social media, and I'm proud of that.
That's awesome. I love that. I think that's what social media should be about. I agree 100% on that.
Well, I
agree about challenging one another. It should also be about lifting each other up too. But I mean, it's a good place to keep in touch and help your friends. But I think you need to have that social compact of it.
Yeah. Well, it should be, I mean, if it's about you, it should be your authentic you, I would think, and not just, oh, going out and getting drinks with my friends or going to this party or I'm perfect, you know.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with being real on your social media. It's way more impactful than a lot of people give it credit for.
I agree 100%. And you've really honed in on social justice. I mean, you have death threats for some of your opinions, but where do you think your voice came from? How does it inspire you now?
Where my voice came from, that's really funny. I think my voice came from exes and ex-friends and just the whole gay social structure. I've always been one to speak out and not be a part of things I don't agree with. And I've never been the one that's been afraid to, like, use his voice. So, yeah, I think just living through experiences I've had has really helped me find the confidence in my voice and beliefs. And I feel very paternal for some reason to gay youth, actually just youth in general, but specifically gay youth. So anytime, or anyone that's struggling or vulnerable or stigmatized, I feel very paternal to them. So I become like a papa bear, and if there's something on social media that just infuriates me or I feel like could be detrimental to someone that's vulnerable, then Papa Bear comes out, and there's no stopping it. So
I love that. Hey, let me circle back real quick. There's one thing I want to talk to you about when we're talking about the porn industry. Right now, the Harvey Weinstein thing is so big right now.
Yes.
And we talk about the power that the media brings. And you were a big-time star. I mean, you were in some huge roles with some major players. How prevalent did it ever come across to you in the gay porn industry? Was there those power struggles? I mean, you think about it, it's always like teased about, like, I'll sleep with me to be something or other, but did you ever
encounter that?
Not as big? Or
tell me your thoughts. No, not gay porn is probably way more respectable and real than anyone gives it credit for. I've never had any of those problems at all in gay porn. Now, when I lived in West Hollywood and I was going up for acting roles and I was a go-go dancer in West Hollywood, that's where I issues. I mean, I had a very powerful man rape me twice, and the community knew about it. I had other very powerful gay men in West Hollywood blacklist me because I wouldn't sleep with them, or that's where the problem is.
That's interesting.
Power,
yeah.
Money and influence over community really helps perpetrators get away with whatever they want. And
gotcha.
That's the dangerous aspect of assaults and rapes.
Right.
And
that's interesting, though,
because
I'm sorry to interrupt, but what you're really saying, though, is the porn industry, and people think of the porn industry as subjugating and kind of being it, but you're saying there's less of that than you actually see in the Hollywood and other scenes out there.
Oh, God,
I never
saw any of that. There's no need to in gay porn because we're already open, and it's hard to explain. Down low, like, there's nothing to gain.
Not the power structure there is in Hollywood and stuff like that, I get you.
Oh, yeah, or even just within, like, the large gay communities, there's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of people that can have power and influence over a great many in a community or whatever. So that's the difference there.
Gotcha. Now, well, back to your writing. I mean, you've had these amazing stories, and you write so well. Have you thought about doing a memoir? Have you been approached about it? What are your thoughts on that at this point?
Well, I consider my articles to be my memoir, my autobiographies, if you will, just sharing parts of my life. I think that's kind of how I look at it. But no, I want to start writing some fiction books based on LGBT kind of centered, maybe about some of my experiences, and then like maybe some about issues that I think should be addressed from an LGBT perspective, but that are not solely just for LGBT to read. Like, I would love to have LGBT-centered books for young adults to read, compelled to read, even if they were straight.
That'd be amazing.
And just to really mainstream that and have people relate to the message and not think that they're supposed to read something or relate to something because it's not representative of them. So the tricky part is getting to that point where the message is more important than a character's sexuality.
Right. This is what we got to do. We have to team up, Corey, because my goal is to spread LGBT history, and you're the writer, so we got to find a fun way to incorporate history and young adults into the writing of LGBT history and make it fun and exciting. So you can do the writing, and I'll produce it.
There you go. Well, I mean, that's part of what I've been doing with my writing. I try and talk about things that we shouldn't be forgetting when it comes to our LGBT history, like the era of the death sentence. Ryan White article that I wrote, it was more of a reminder to people about our history, especially when it came to HIV and AIDS. And then, you know, I've written about things like Ellen DeGeneres and her coming out episode. Just kind of trying to remind people of our history and where we come from.
Yeah, I'm so happy and proud of our mainstreaming now and able to of everything that's come forward for the youth, but it just frustrates me to no end when people don't know who Harvey Milk is or what Stonewall was or that what a bathhouse was and what
Shepherd.
Exactly, and the activism that really turned around AIDS, what even the president wouldn't mention when Ronald Reagan was in office. So, I think that history needs to be told. I agree 100%.
Or how we've been murdered, or how our community has been put through hell, discriminated against, hidden, stigmatized, held down, killed, how our lives were never valued. I mean, there are some, the majority of gay history, gay men and LGBT.
There's some horror stories out there, that's for damn sure.
Getting a little upset, like, thinking about it. We can never
forget
that.
All right, well, we're starting to run out of time, and I agree. We're going to team up on something like that, because I think history needs to be set out there. Corey Frederick, thanks so much for coming on Left of Straight Show. Let my listeners know what your social media is so they can find you and be able to find about these great things that you talk about. Where can they find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at Corey Frederick, and you can find me on Facebook, CL Frederick. And you can also find me on Huffington Post, CL Frederick as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, my friend, for being on the show. We're going to have you back on one of our Transformation Tuesdays for a fitness segment real soon. And we have to come back on Wednesday. On Wednesdays, I do a show called Standing on My Soapbox, where we rant and rave all about politics and LGBT news and pop culture. We could have fun on that one.
Yes, we could.
All right, my friend, it's great having you on the show. Thanks so much. Guys, we're going to go ahead and play a little bit of Brandon and James, good friends of the show. This is their Wicked Game cover. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Mismo con dudas en salto mortal, aparecen deseos y tú que me haces saltar. Nunca desde este sueño y apareces tú. Nunca desde un amor y apareces.
About today, and I'm going to get to it, but I want to go right into our first interview today because they are actually my first international call coming in. They are Skyping live from outside the country. I'm so excited to have them. They're a producing couple of the film Ekash. It's been garnering praise in film festivals and special viewings all over the world, and dealing in almost a painfully truthful way. The story deals with the hard-fought stories of LGBT homelessness, AIDS, teenage runaways, gender identity, and even more. It's a very poignant story that needed to be told, and I absolutely loved it. They were kind enough to send me a private link to the movie, and it's actually showing right now. We're going to talk about it in a bit. It's at the New York Film Festival in Manhattan today, so we'll talk about that in a bit. But please welcome to the show Katia and Michael Gonzalez. Katia, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for calling in. I know you're calling in from out of country and only have one mic to share there, but tell Michael we said hi.
Yeah, he's right here. We're managing, both
yeah,
of us.
We're managing.
Very good. Well, where are you calling in from today? Where are you Skyping in from?
We're in Barcelona, Spain.
Amazing. How cool is that?
Yeah,
well,
that's
thank
actually.
Thank you so much for calling in.
That's my home country. That's my home city. So that's where we are
well,
right now.
Let's start with your background a little bit, because, Cady, this is an amazing movie. You wrote and directed this film, along with producing it with Michael. But from what I understand, your main occupation, you've been a photographer for most of your life. Is this your
yes.
first film? Tell me about yourself and your career, and where did you start out in this business?
Well, I started out after I had two kids, and then I started taking pictures, and I started doing models from New York, and it really grew very rapidly. It was not something I was super trained for, but I immediately fell in love with it, and I started working for various magazines. And you know, I worked for French Photo, ID Magazine, Spin, Vogue,
wow.
Colors, Vibe Magazine, Paper Magazine, Blaze, among others. And I photographed David Cronenberg, Russell Simmons. I did a lot of work for Vibe Magazine. I always liked everything edgy. And
right.
I did a lot of street photography. I shot the Ramones, David Byrne, Notorious B.I.G., not with a
wow,
gun.
Wow, how
but
cool is that? That is
but
awesome.
Yeah, and I always liked the rough kids. And with this film, it's the same thing. They were rough kids. They were Latino. I'm Latino, so I was very attracted to Jake. He was found him on Facebook. And I just happened to see him at a party of a friend on Facebook. And I said, who's this kid? And I wanted to make him a model because I had worked for many magazines in fashion. And he was 16 at the time. And he was shy and just the most beautiful boy. And he was kind of a rebel. Like if I told him, show up tomorrow, look like this, he would show up with his eyebrows shaved. Or he
oh
would show
goodness.
Up with his hair completely different than I asked him to show up. So he was a disaster, to say the least. And I just fell in love with him. It was like, at that point, I should have dropped him. But I just never did. I always tried to help him. And I was writing a sort of Midnight Cowboy the script, more today, Midnight Cowboy. Story, and I thought, why not get him into this and just make Midnight Cowboy more current? And I really thought that it was a mysterious part of the LGBT community that we were not seeing on films. The kids from New York, from the Bronx, and
right.
they had it much rougher. And I thought there was no coverage on these kids, and they were beautiful and just so gorgeous. And of course I fell in love with the way they dressed and the way they walk and the way they talk. And I thought, this is it. They're just so hot. So,
was this your first time to try writing, or was this your first?
I had wrote another script, which I'm now entering in Sundance, which I actually wrote it for 7 years, and I didn't get it out until recently. Now I'm getting it out. So I wrote a script before this one, but this one was right to the heart of everything I knew. All my photography is pretty much like the film. So it was very close to the characters I knew when I photographed characters for my own personal work. And I just apply the... I always liked the stories of the lonely, of the rejected, of the downbeat type of guy, and he was
right.
just perfect. He was 16. His emotions were all over the place. He didn't know who he was. He was fighting for his identity. He had problems with his mother. He had problems growing up. He got bullied at school. He lived in the in New York East Side, which area? Brooklyn, East New York, Sorry,
okay.
Mike just corrected me. He's New York in Brooklyn, which is really, really rough. And he was
sure.
a pretty boy, and he had a lot of problems growing up. You know, being bullied, not just with his mother and the disagreements they had, but being bullied. He felt very lonely. And this story that I wrote was close to his skin, you know. It was
right.
basically almost every story of everyone who's been lonely, homeless, with problems with identity, whether gender or not. I thought it was more interesting with the gender identity because it was a subject that wasn't being covered. And
right.
enough at the time. Now it's really starting to take off, which is great. But at the time, and I, throughout fashion, I worked for 20 years in fashion. I mean, I didn't meet one straight guy. I worked with only gay people. So my life was always around gay guys. My roommates were gay. Everyone was gay. So I was very familiar with them, but not really with a 16-year-old from the Bronx, you know?
Right.
So
well,
was,
let's bring Michael in for a second. Michael, what did
yes.
you think? You see Kati forming this relationship and kind of see she's doing this and trying to help him out, and he's kind of bucking against the system. Were you kind of hoping she'd just drop him, or where did you came in, and did you feel the potential for this as she started to tell you more of his story and write it? Or what's your background here? Were you always a producer before this film?
Actually, no. This is my first production as a producer, co-producer, actually. Each other for nearly, it's, I think I would say, 20 years we're going on.
Mm-hmm.
And my take here is, you know, she wrote the script. She met the kid, Jake Bestray, and tried to get him into modeling. And I'm actually a student of hers, if, you know, to be quite honest here. And, you know, she just wrote the script. I read the script. I got interested in it. And we just decided to, you know, make the film together. And as we, you know, making the film, and the making of the film is how I, you know, ended up learning. And, yeah.
I can actually speak for him on this because he probably is a little shy about it. But Mike came really was on the street at the age of 13. So he totally identifies with the characters in the film in the sense of the homelessness. And his mother died of AIDS in the 80s. So Mike
wow.
learned, he's self-taught himself to edit. He's been doing all the tons of production on the film. He is so good at it. I mean, it's amazing. The work he did editing the film is just amazing. And he knows more technical stuff than I do. And it was all self-learned.
Yeah, I would say I'm like the Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler. You know, I just
that's amazing.
I
love
that.
Yeah, he's now really good at it, and he just calls me on things I don't know. So he's really is. I always believed in the street kids, and he's the first one, and he's no longer a street kid. And Jake was the second one that I fell in love with that I thought could go there, you know. So it's a really root film. Is really from the street. I was the only one that didn't actually come from the street, but it was pretty much a street, and it was not easy to make. It was not easy to make.
Excuse me. Well, talk about your casting a bit too. For I think people have caught on, but if you haven't caught on, Jake, who this is kind of based on, who you met in real life, is now the star of this film. He is actually Ikaj, and
right.
then all of the actors you brought in. We're actors, but not really actors. These are real people that are kind of helping bring this real situation to life. How did you go about doing your casting process to get these characters?
Well, I knew one of the kids was a nephew. Mike is Puerto Rican, and he's New Yorkican. And this was I met a nephew of his in the house of a sister-in-law. And I thought he had great looks, so I recruited him. And then the other kid, I would look through friends. I was used to casting with photography. I always found the most beautiful, unusual characters in photography for the personal work.
Right.
So this was nothing. A lot of people ask me that. How did you get these characters? But that was nothing abnormal for me. That was very easy. Maybe something I bring into film that other filmmakers might not be as close to, characters that you're used to shooting, you know, on the street.
Right.
So that was I've always had an eye for personalities that go with the characters. If the characters look really good and have no personality, then I'm not interested, you know. And then Mecca came along later because one of the characters, the first character I got to go with Jake, he is now a woman. He's not 100% a woman.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And this happened through the movie, but he didn't tell me. So I knew there was something going on. And now he's like, she's like, I'm nervous because I don't know if I want to see myself as I was before, but I want to see it. I mean, emotional about it, you know.
Sure, I can imagine.
But definitely, you know, she enjoyed having done that before she went into transition because she has something to look back, you know.
Right.
And I had to recast. Yeah, I had to recast to put a pair. And I wanted to do the subject of AIDS because I had a lot of friends. Actually, my first agent in photography died of AIDS. A very young stylist that I used to work with a lot died of AIDS. And I had a roommate that lived with me that I thought, you know, for a long time that he got lucky and didn't get AIDS and skipped that era that was so dangerous. But he eventually got AIDS. So I was surrounded by that. Plus, Mike's mother died of AIDS, so I wanted to put a character because I think AIDS is growing a lot. That is not spoken because you can live somewhat, but I don't think the life is the same. You know, it's a life where you're feeling like you're the Walking Dead.
Right. Sure.
You know? And I think that a lot of young kids don't think it's so dangerous because there's a pill. And it is still dangerous. So I wanted to put that without making it a very depressing, just a part of life. Just like when you go and meet people and you go to a club and you're a kid and you meet someone that has it, it's not going to give you a big story why he has it. He's just going to, it's just there, you know?
Sure, it's just his life.
So
yeah,
I wanted to make it just there, yeah. And he's a character. Mecca is a complete character.
I can just imagine because, yeah, all those tattoos are their own, right? You didn't do any makeup on that. That's all their.
Oh,
that's
no,
their
I'm very lazy.
Right?
Yeah, I'm very lazy. I tried to cast exactly how I want them to look.
I love that. I love it.
Yeah.
Well,
I tried to cast the closest to the. And once I had actors that wanted to do it, once they read the script and saw where I was going, and because of photography, I had some connections, but and then some cool actors actually. But once I started with the real thing, I really didn't want to move from the real thing. I always
right.
believed it's got to be better with the real thing, you know. So I stuck
what
with it. It was very difficult, but it was worth it.
What was some of the things that you're going from photography, so you're used to doing, setting up shots and things like that, and you did your own cinematography too, I think. But what
right.
was what were some challenges making a film that you didn't expect? Anything kind of come up you weren't
right.
expecting, or what was your challenges you faced?
Well, I think it was, if without wishful thinking, you wouldn't make a movie. But I guess I was unaware of the reality that it would take a while to make the film. And it's not like a photo shoot that you do in a day or two and you're done. So if the kids are difficult, you're just going to be done in a day or two after the shoot. Well, this was a marriage between the kids and us. And And they didn't, and I call him a kid. He was a teenager, but to me now I'm very close to Jake. He's like really part of my family.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah, he's really my kid, second to his mom. Yeah, you know, his mom is first, but he's definitely my kid. There's no question. He, you know, I'm weak to him. Let's just say that. And I've seen him grown in height and as a, and become more mature, you know. So it's really, I love that kid. He's very special. You know, I wanted to give up on him many times, but he had that thing that you know when a kid has got so much potential.
Right.
So I stuck with it, and I'm glad. He's been nominated 3 times. He's won Best Actor once. So he hasn't done badly. And the film has been, it's won 2 first best films. I won Best New Director, and it's been nominated. That we've had 3 other nominations.
Well, it's just, yeah, I was going to say, it's been going in film festivals all over the country. You have, let's talk about tonight. Tonight it's playing in the International Film Festival of Manhattan. Actually, while we're speaking, I think it started at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so you have that going tonight. Then you're doing the UK debut on the 23rd of this month. So you're about a week away from playing over in Leeds at the No Gloss Film Fest. Were you excited to go there?
Very much so. That's an amazing festival. It's very edgy, very underground. I also enter the film in LGBT and non-LGBT because I really wanted to bring this film outside of the box.
Right.
To have people see it from the other side, you know. So I just really wanted the film to be a human story so you don't get hang up on, oh, it's just gay. No, it's not. It's a kid suffering. And,
right.
You know, and you can identify if you're not gay too, you know.
Exactly.
So I wanted to bring it to a more human and close and less division because I thought that was very important, you know. And so this film festival is not LGBT, but then on next month, the 2nd, 4th, and 12th, we have the film playing in Les Gays Cinemat of Madrid. And that's the biggest Hispanic-speaking LGBT film festival in the world.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and I just want to add to what she just said about it being screened to straight audiences. Like, the reaction that we've gotten from straight audiences has been phenomenal. And, yeah, it's just, you know, she tried to focus more on a human story. And, yeah, it's just been great. Everybody's just been, you know, really accepting the film. So we're, like, really, really happy about that.
Yeah, they talk about how he suffered, what they feel. Even we had this detective. She had her own film, and she's an ex-NYPD detective, Puerto Rican girl. And she said, I never understood when I used to arrest these kids. I never understood them like I have when I seen this film. So
right.
I thought that was pretty. And we took the film to a homeless shelter. And a lot of the kids that were there during LGBT and LGBT homeless shelter in New York, Sylvia's Place.
Mm-hmm.
And we played it on a Thanksgiving. We also brought the food with Reverend Carmen, who's also an LGBT priest. And we were very surprised that those are the toughest critics because they lived that and they were really into it. They were really into it. I tried to keep it as real as possible to a painful level, you know.
Now, have you brought it to any place where you're going to try to get some wide release on this? I mean, you guys are doing the guerrilla marketing campaign, and you're doing so great. I've seen you reaching out. Thank you so much for reaching out to me. You're reaching out to all these great publications. Has there been any interest yet in doing some wide release on it? Because it's such a powerful film.
Yes. What happens is when you're doing the festival round, you cannot be with a distributor yet.
Okay.
So we are talking to distributors. We're sorting out which way we're going to go. And we're
gotcha.
Talking to one that sounds really interesting that we're probably going to have it and is an LGBT sort of Netflix. and we think we're probably going to go with them.
We can't give it away yet.
But
yeah.
We've probably given away a lot.
There are some
film festivals that do. I mean, you can have distribution at some film festivals, but it's most of them, you know, require that you don't.
So
right.
You have
now,
to
talk
do
about
this
your
year,
learning
yeah.
curve, Michael. Michael, talk about your learning curve. What's been the most fun part
learning
of this journey for you? This is your first kind of film. What have you really enjoyed and got to learn about the entire movie making business?
Oh, I've learned so many aspects of the movie making business. I knew nothing, as Kat told you, I came from a very poor background. I didn't have the education. I didn't go to film school or anything like that. So I learned, everything that I know along the way, by going online, taking online courses, just research online, and just basically trial through the fire, you know, and sometimes
mm-hmm.
dipping in water once in blue to cool off. But it's been a great experience for me, and I've learned so much from budgeting, which is something that financing is the most important part. I wasn't really on top of my game on that because I wasn't familiar with how it works.
Right.
And, it's very important to get, when you're getting the funds in place, that you have each and every thing taken care of. For instance, film festivals, you have to be able to attend them. And, producing all of the video duplications, CDs and posters and stuff like that, all of the marketing material. And, it runs up the cost. So, yeah, I learned a lot.
And that
also,
is awesome.
Yeah,
but it sounds like,
editing.
Do you feel like it is a calling
like
now? It's something you really
want
to keep doing, I hope?
Yes, of course. It's like I caught a bug, like Kat always tells me. It's like, yeah, she's always been pushing me, like, forever. Like, hey, you should get into, the arts and
stuff.
Yeah, photography first. And I didn't have an interest for it. And then just one day I picked up a camcorder. And then I just got the bug. And then I just, started editing footage. And I really, really loved, just cutting up the footage and putting it together. So, I took some online courses and I learned on my own. And here I am.
Actually, I always told him, I said, once you get the bug, I won't need to push you because you'll get the bug.
Right.
And this was years. He didn't get the bug. He didn't go into it. And when he picked up, I had a camera and I started filming, and he picked it up and he started filming. And I go, he got the bug. And he started learning way before we started the film. By the time we started the film, he was really already a pretty good editor. And by the time we finished the film, he's a fast, really good editor. And he brings in what he has naturally. He was an artist. He was always an artist. He would draw. He did music. So he's really good being able to sync in the music and every technical. He's a technical nut. So now I've created a monster. He's a monster.
I love it. I can't wait for more and more and more to come. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Now,
if I continue this way, I have Jake. I have him. Maybe I'll have a whole crowd coming out of the streets. There will be an entire team,
That's amazing. Have your own studio based out of that. That would be amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
Now, are you
able,
dubbing these films when you bring it to Spain and everything? Are you dubbing the films? Or do you keep them in English, or how does that work?
Well, actually, the Spanish festival is going to put the translations. Some of them give you that wonderful thing. Then we have a girl in Russia who's become a fan, and she's also LGBT, and she's going to do the Russian translations. And that's her. She's going to do it. Then I have a friend of my son's who's going to do it in Chinese. So we're going to...
And we also had it translated in Greek, where we screened at the Thessaloniki International LGBTQ Film Festival, and that was a couple of weeks ago. So, we were fortunate to have it translated into Greek as well.
Yeah, they some of the festivals do that, some of them. So it's a great thing. You get that plus. So you know you're more ready for the market. Otherwise, the distributor takes care of it. But I'd rather the festival takes care of it because I think there's more personal care and how they translate. You know, if they pick the film, they understand it, they're going to translate it better than someone who's sitting on a desk and doesn't get the film. So for me, it's very important how they translate it because you know how easy it is to chop all that lingo that Ikash has.
A lot of slang.
It's like it's all slang and it's all, you know, New Yorican. And he's very funny,
great.
No, Mecca?
Yeah.
Mecca, did you like Mecca in the film?
Yeah, of course. No, Mecca was amazing. I thought everything was amazing. I mean, even now, is it Michael? Is it your, like, uncle or something that even played the dad? I mean, everyone's really believable.
Oh, no, actually,
and everything. I think it was
that,
awesome.
That's funny you mentioned that. The person who plays the dad is actually my brother, real life brother.
Yeah, I almost used Mike for the father, to tell you the truth. But then his brother had gray hair. But I think Mike would have been even better.
In the beginning, we did some takes.
And he was sick of Jake at that point. So if he would have been very aggressive towards Jake, it would have been really good. He loves Jake. I mean, Jake has spent nights in my house, will eat all my food. I mean, it's like really a kid all the way. Jake is family, but you know, I actually think Mike would have been really good, but his brother did a pretty good job.
I thought everyone did an amazing job. Now, do you think you're going to keep filming films in New York, or now do you like, are you going to go back to your native Spain and maybe film a movie there, or what's the challenges of filming in your native country, or do you prefer, does it depend on what the story really drives?
Well, actually, it's all always about raw. Or about some way or some emotions that are not out there, you know. But right now I'm filming my mom. It's a documentary, but I've always said I would film her because she's very funny and it's like the elderly crowd. They're hilarious.
Uh-huh.
And she's a very funny character. And so I'm filming her, but that's not a main project. Actually, the script that I wrote, it's not fully finished, but it's finished, but it's like a draft, but if I'm working with Sundance on that, we'll see in January, then that will be my next film. I have like three other films started, because I like the Latino. If I was to do films, I would stay in the Latino and New York. I'm very stuck on a world that I know very well, you know?
Right, sure.
So, and always from the people that have had not all the means, and they just talk funnier than anybody else, and they're like, those are my characters.
Well, like you said, it's real. It's just real. And so it comes across as real. It comes across as authentic. And I think that's what makes a powerful movie. The more authentic you can be, the more powerful the movie. And you guys have captured that beautifully.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just have to say, for Kat is an amazing writer, and oh boy, you guys don't know what's coming next. Her next feature film is going to be amazing, amazing. The script is unbelievable. I can't spoil it, but
you've had such an interesting life yourself, Michael. Have you ever thought of maybe writing yourself? Is that something that you've ever thought about doing? I mean,
well, I've always, you know, like Kat said, I've always been an artist, but I also write myself. I like to write poetry and stuff like that. I did started writing a short. I just really never finished it, but yeah, it's interesting you asked me that. I'll you know, with the help of Kat, because I always, you know, appreciate her opinions and her help. Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
He'll get going. Eventually, he'll make his own film, and I'll be there sitting, watching, you know. I expect that.
Yeah, but I'd like to keep her because her eye is amazing. She's like the best behind the camera, so.
I can imagine. Now, what are you doing to photography? Is that now turned into a hobby, or are you still doing that professionally as well?
Well, no, I have Yeah, my last work I did is a book about New York City, and it was done over 2 or 3 years, and I'm holding on to it. So you know when books come out and they're 10 years later, they look like
right,
the 80s uh-huh. and the 90s, and you go, oh my god,
yeah, like
that's
the big
the
coffee
80s.
Table books, and yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually that's one I'm holding on, and it has so much back. It just is the entire New York City. All the characters that look like Jake all over the city, and it's a book. We'll send you that link that to the website where I have that.
Oh, that would be great! Yeah, sounds amazing.
Yeah, but really, I'll take pictures because it's something that's just really easy for me. Just like filming, it's not something I think about. It's not like I go, "Oh, I want to get a shot like this." Just shoot. I don't really think about it very much. I'm always more into the... This is 3D for me, going from one image to 3D, where you're telling a story. And it's really exciting for me. It's like, I really like it. And I love dialogue that is real. And
sure.
I will correct people from the ghetto that are talking ghetto, and I'll say, don't say it like that. Say it like this. And it's like, you know, I'll if they go and it's like the stuff they're saying is just looking like a little bit of bull, you know, I'll say, no.
Fearless. I like being fearless.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm fearless. They totally fear me because I'm like really, really passionate Spanish. I don't think they want to hear me mad.
She's a Leo. She's a Leo, by the way.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, guys,
and
I don't want to keep it too much longer. I promise, Mike, only be a half hour here, and I know you guys are busy up there in the time zone difference and everything. Thank you so much for your time. This is an amazing film, and I can't wait for its wide release because I'm keeping it all a secret. I'm not giving anyone my secret link. So I can't wait for the wide release of it here, and you have to come back when the next project comes out.
Yes. Actually, when it gets released and we maybe make Ohio – we'll definitely be in touch with you, Scott.
Yeah, for any film festival.
Oh, yeah, I'll book you a couple of theaters to screen it in. We'll screen it
for
the LGBT
film
audiences
there.
Here from Cleveland to Pittsburgh. I got places for you to show
you
it at.
You got that.
Yeah,
because we want to go, you know, definitely we like going to places where it normally wouldn't reach. That's our whole goal.
Yeah, and for the audience out there, if for any updates you want to, you know, check on the film, just go to ekajthemovie.com. Ekaj, E-K-A-J, themovie.com.
That was my next thing before we found out. I want to make sure they found all the social media. Give your Facebook and Twitter as well.
Well, actually, that being that we haven't transferred the domain, that's our Facebook page. So that's where you get all the updates on the film.
And Ekaj, the movie, and Tumblr and Twitter, you can find us too.
Twitter, you can find us on Twitter at Ekaj, the movie, or at Kati
and
Mike.
Gonzalez Film.
C-A-T-I and M-I-K-E.
Yeah, you can find it. If you Google it, you can find us.
Well, I played
Scott.
I played the trailer on my social media today, and I'm going to keep promoting it all the time here. And I'm so looking forward to establishing a friendship. I love having new filmmakers that I can make friends with and help move out there. So that's amazing. Thanks for the time, guys.
Well,
thank
we're just
so
as
much,
happy
Scott.
To meet
thank
you, Scott.
You.
Thanks so much for the support. And
no problem.
We'll
stay
let you know
line.
When the movie comes.
You got it.
Okay,
do that for
thank
me.
Thank you so much.
Stay on the line here for me for just a second, guys. We're going to be back in just a little bit. You've listened to the amazing, amazing film called Ekaj, and we're here with Michael and Kati Gonzalez. They've been talking about this great film. You're listening to Left of Straight Show. We're
wishing you a happy Halloween, and we will see you here tomorrow with Jenna Ushkowitz and Derek Jameson. Good night.